is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show, my colleague, co-host, and co-pilot, as we head to the planet Mars. And we're very pleased to welcome a guide, an interdisciplinary scientist, supporting Sherlock Instrument on Perseverance, Mars 2020. Meet Sunanda Sharma, postdoctoral fellow at JPL, part of the Planetary Geosciences Group. Sunanda, it's wonderful to have you here to interpret some of these spectacular reports, what they all mean. I read from most recently, Perseverance, exploring Jezero Crater, collected its 13th drilled out rock core in recent days. A beautiful site for collecting Lucky Rock Core 13, said JPL officials, currently nerding out over this fine-grained sample. All right, stop there. You're collecting samples on the surface of Mars. The theory is that someday they'll be returned. We want to speak about what you're hoping to find in those samples, but I begin with a word that is used in many of the headlines about Perseverance now. Percy has found organics. What does that mean, Sunanda? What is that something that squirms? Is that something that could squirm? Good evening to you.
Yeah, so very nice to be here and great questions to start off with because, yeah, that's been all over the headlines everywhere. And organics can mean they talk about what something is, not exactly where it came from. So organics are commonly called the building blocks of life. So when I say organics, I mean organic molecules. So often we call them the building blocks of life because all life as we know it is made up of organics. And so organics are molecules that have carbon and hydrogen, and oftentimes they have other things like oxygen, nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. And so all of the life that we know it on Earth is made up of these constituent pieces. And so we know that organic matter exists when it's not coming from biological sources. So it can be made by chemical processes that are not related to life. So for instance, through water-rock interactions, and it's also found in things like interstellar dust. But that being said, organics can also be left behind after a organism decayed over a very, very long period of time and was preserved in minerals. So for us, the organics are super interesting because they have this potential to be related to life, but they could also be created by chemical processes not related to life.
So we're not going to get carried away. We're just going to say right now there's evidence that something might have happened, but the evidence might also point to the fact that nothing out of the ordinary has happened. I understand. We have organics everywhere, including in asteroids. David?
When the samples get back to Earth, can you then tell whether or where they came from and if they suggest possible life or not? And if they do suggest possible life, why do we have to wait till 2033 to get them back here?
Fair question. So to your first question, I think we'll have a better shot of being able to tell. I won't be so presumptuous to say that we will definitely be able to say so. But the reason that we have to wait to get these back is right now, the rover is picking those up and dropping them off at our caching depot, hopefully soon this autumn. And then there's a very complex Mars sample return mission that's currently being planned, and then it will launch closer to the end of this decade. It'll take some time to get to Mars, pick up the samples, and then bring them back here. And then they'll go through a process of containment so that we can safely bring those samples back and then open them up in labs that have the right tools and techniques to start studying them in close detail. So I will first say that the rover has an incredible scientific payload. So we have a bunch of different instruments on there that are some of the best at doing what they do, but they're also optimized to work in a really rugged Martian environment. So it's not that we have the closest cameras that have ever been created ever by humans. We have the closest ones that have ever been used on Mars, I think, or some of them. But in labs back here on Earth, we can do much higher resolution analyses and we can do correlative analyses. So we can do, for instance, like I would want to do Raman and fluorescence as we're doing with Sherlock on Mars, but at much finer scale resolution. But then I would also want to do other types of spectroscopy techniques to confirm the results that we would see.
Sunanda, I learned from you that you're working with Sherlock, which is one of the tools on Perseverance. It stands for something that requires attention. Scanning habitable environments with Raman and luminescence for organics and chemicals. Oh, of course it's called Sherlock. What does it do, Sunanda?
Fair question. So Sherlock gives multiple types of information. It gives images and spectra. And so images, I understand pictures. Spectra are basically signals that result from light interaction with the surface of a rock. And the light that we use on Sherlock is a special type of laser that you can think of as sort of a fancy black light, except our rays on Mars. So it helps us see what's in the rock that is otherwise invisible to us. And the images that we take with Sherlock's two cameras, one of which is called Watson, because it stands for something that's also very long, but also because Sherlock and Watson is very cute together, it gives us visual context for where the laser hit. So when Sherlock studies a rock surface, it shoots its laser in a pattern across an area that's about the size of a pencil eraser, so like quite fine resolution. And the laser lights up different components in the rock that include chemicals, minerals, and organic matter, if it's there. And organics, as I mentioned, are commonly called the building blocks of life. And where they're found in association with those minerals helps us try to narrow down the possibilities of where they came from and how they were preserved or concentrated or transported over this very long period of time. And organics tend to clump. Go ahead, sorry.
No, did you just say that you're looking for water? Is that what we're getting to here?
Well, that's part of what we can try to do. So there's a band that we could see with Sherlock's ramen, which you can see a hydration feature, as we call it. And one of the other instruments on the rover can see that as well. But for us, Sherlock is really optimized to detect organic material if it's there.
I see.
So we have the reason that we're using this very special laser that I mentioned is because organics will show up in a preferential way that is unique to the environment that we're sending it to. And we're hoping they'll show up really nicely for us.
David?
So you pick up these samples and they're put in tubes and they're carried to a depository area on Mars where they're going to sit for 11 years or maybe a few years less than that, depending on when they're picked up. Is there anything about your storage process that might alter the character of the sample? So if they're just left on the surface of Mars, they're going to be whatever the natural surface of Mars undergoes. But now you're tampering with that. So how do you protect the samples?
Fair question. So in terms of the way that the tubes are stored themselves, I know the design of the material and structure for the tubes was very carefully done to try to preserve them as well as we could. But one of the things that comes to mind for me is everything that we're looking at has probably been on the surface of Mars for like billions of years. So a decade in human time is not going to hopefully change them too much. If there is refractory or like well-preserved organic matter in there, I would very much hope it'll still be there after just a decade or so. So I know a decade sounds long to us, but in terms of how long these organics have been there, I think it's actually like hopefully very, very short.
A fundamental Sananda about Jezero Crater. The presumption in the reporting is that water flowed here once early on Mars life, maybe the first, what do they call it, the Noahic age, the Noah age, early first billion.
Noachian. Yeah.
Noachian. However, there's also been discerning voices saying, no, this is the effect of lava, not water. Have we confirmed that this is a lake bottom and not a lava pool?
I would say that the evidence that I've seen and that the team has put together does point to the fact that this was a potentially habitable lake environment here. Also, just because if you zoom out, that is very much what the delta looks like. And we've explored two different regions. We've looked at the crater floor, and that does look like it's igneous, meaning that these igneous rocks are crystallized from magma. So think lava flow in that area. Now we're in the delta, and the materials that we're seeing here and the types of rocks have changed. So we think now we're seeing sedimentary rocks, which is what we would expect to see from a delta that's meeting with a ancient habitable lake. So I would say the evidence that the team has come with points to this direction. And I will say that I would point to geologists on the team to answer this question in more detail.
Sure.
My background's biology.
Sure, I understand. So that convinces me that we're looking at what was a lake bed. David, one more question.
How do you use this information to decide where to go next with the rover and with your instruments?
Yeah, really good question. So one of the things that I really like in terms of our process of scientific investigation is the instruments that we have on the rover sort of span this wide range of scales. So first, we're using orbital data that we had from before this mission, to decide to go to Jezero Crater. But then we use some of the instruments like SuperCam, for instance, that are remote science instruments that will do a bulk mineralogy characterization. So basically, we'll be in a location, they scan a bunch of rocks and say, like, okay, that one looks like it has something that could be materials like a sulfate in there, or it could have a material like a carbonate. And some of these minerals, when I hear them as a biologist, as an astrobiologist, my ears perk up, because I know those are on Earth very good at preserving organic matter. And so when I suggest to make decisions to the broader team, I think about what could preserve organic material and other potential biosignatures for a very long period of time based on Earth analog studies. So after we do the remote science, then we come up to the exact location we want the rover to be. And then we decide on targets. We literally like drop pins, being like, all right, this one looks cool. This one looks interesting. I think this could be approached. The engineers who are fantastic on the team evaluate each of those. And then we come in with instruments like Sherlock that I'm on and Pixel, which are both on the arm. And they do proximity science. And so that gives some of the closest views onto a rock. And we can do abrasions to get rid of the surface of a rock, which is most affected by the external environment. So we think they would have less preservation potential there. So we do the abrasion to grind down the rock and then give this close approach. So going across those scales, I think, is one of the strongest processes that the rover has. And we use the remote science, I think, to determine from bulk mineralogy and just stratigraphy and seeing where the rocks lie to see what would be most interesting for us.
We're speaking with Sunandan Sharma, an interdisciplinary scientist at JPL. She's especially working on Sherlock, the instrument on Mars 2020. She's part of the Planetary Geosciences Group at JPL. And we're going to ask her to stay for the favorite part of these programs whenever we come up against an investigator of the planets, which is unlimited budget. What do you want to know next about the surface of Mars? David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. This is CBS Eye on the World, Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Batchelor.